Hey guys, finding the perfect gift for the food lover in your life is easy. Thanks to Goldbelly. Goldbelly ships America's most iconic foods straight from world-famous restaurants right to your door. So if you want to treat someone to Joe's Stone Crab from Miami, Franklin Barbecue from Texas, or desserts from famous foodies like Ina Garten or Martha Stewart, Goldbelly has you covered with free shipping anywhere in the country. Just go to goldbelly.com and for a limited time, get 20% off your first order with promo code GIFT. That's promo code GIFT. Hey guys, finding the perfect gift for the food lover in your life is easy. Thanks to Goldbelly. Goldbelly ships America's most iconic foods straight from world-famous restaurants right to your door. So if you want to treat someone to Joe's Stone Crab from Miami, Franklin Barbecue from Texas, or desserts from famous foodies like Ina Garten or Martha Stewart, Goldbelly has you covered with free shipping anywhere in the country. Just go to goldbelly.com and for a limited time, get 20% off your first order with promo code GIFT. That's promo code GIFT.
Today on The Grave Talks, the power of mediumship. A conversation with Scott Allen. Scott Allen's discovery of mediumship is an unsettling ghost story that could have been written as a narrative of a man gone mad, complete with disembodied voices and encounters with spirits who drove him to the brink of insanity. The spirits that tormented him follow him to this day, spirits that can be both friend and foe. Today we hear his story on The Grave Talks.
You know, it's really interesting. It's been a long time. So I was a funeral director and an embalmer for, God, 35 years.
Wow.
I was licensed back in the mid-80s, and I worked around the funeral home before then. So I worked as a kid mowing lawns and doing other things. So I had a lot of experience with some really creepy stuff that most people don't have experience with.
Sure.
I'm also a medium.
Mm-hmm.
And that didn't really present itself to me, thank God, while I was doing funeral directing and embalming, because can you imagine, you know, dead
no.
people all day long and they're all having conversations with you. I don't know how that would have worked, really.
It would have been a great sitcom.
It would have been awesome. And a matter of fact, if anybody's listening and they want to sign me up, I'm ready. No, but the funeral home, so I owned three at one time, and I built one from the ground up. There was this beautiful lot that had been owned by the Catholic Diocese of Worcester, Massachusetts.
Mm-hmm.
And at one time, going back 100 years earlier, there had been a home on that site, and it had burned to the ground, and all that was left now was a bunch of trees, and you would never know that there had been anything there. But I loved the lot. I loved where it was. It had a beautiful granite wall out front, and I decided that I was going to build my new funeral home there. So I did. And when we went in and built, they tore out the foundation, and they ripped up all kinds of things from the house that evidently got buried in there. We found druggist bottles. We found pieces of shoes and all kinds of things that had belonged to whoever lived in that house. So they built this brand new building right on that property. And shortly thereafter, things started to happen. You know, my office was on the second floor.
Mm-hmm.
And I noticed that I thought they're alone, and I could hear people walking up and down the stairs. Or if I was downstairs in the main funeral home, I could hear them walking around upstairs. And I knew I was in the place all by myself. I think one of the creepiest things was I was there actually meeting with a family who was arranging a service, and the front door opened and I said, hello. Nobody answered.
Mm-hmm.
And they looked at me kind of strangely. We walked out into the hall. They followed me, and we could smell, like, this is not going to sound good, but you know, like the smell of old person.
Yes.
You know, like old cologne.
Yeah.
Or old hair tonic or whatever it was that they wore.
Sure.
We were in the hall. There was nobody there. So we went back outside and looked. There was nobody in the parking lot. There was nobody on the street and nobody on the sidewalk. And these are the things that started to happen over and over and over again. And then, you know, you'd put something down, it's no longer there.
Mm.
You'd look for it for 4 days. Next thing you know, it's back where it was. So my brand new funeral home was haunted. And it started to really interest me. There was nothing there that was scary. I mean, there was nothing that I thought was harmful or dangerous, but it was fascinating to me. So at the time I had started, now we're going back maybe early 90s, and I don't think, you know, this paranormal craze had really kicked off yet. I don't think any of the shows had started at that point. But there was a group, I had looked online, and there was a group that was doing some ghost hunting. But you have to understand, when you're a funeral director, ghost hunting is kind of frowned upon. Mm-hmm. You know, you join the Kiwanis and the Lions Club, you don't go ghost hunting. And these people, you know, these people, although they were nice people, there weren't places to go back then. Sure. You know, you couldn't go and, you know, I live north of Boston. We can go to the Conjuring House. We can go to the SK Pierce and we pay and we go in and we can investigate. That really wasn't the thing back then.
Sure.
And so they would sort of sneak into places. And I thought, I cannot do this. Mm-hmm. I can't lose my license for breaking into a building or anything else. So I pushed it away. About 12 years ago, I left the industry. It was just overall burnout. Mm-hmm. And that's when I started looking a little closer at ghost hunting, because I wanted to do something for me that had always fascinated me. And by this point, things were already changing. And I watched for a while and I observed. And then one day I went for it. I went and I looked online to find different teams in the area. And I did. I found several, and one got back to me and it seemed to be a match. And so I joined, and that, the rest is history. And that was it. But I don't regret it for a second. It's fascinating. And, you know, one thing has led to another. And then this whole mediumship thing developed. Mm-hmm. And then I got offered, you know, a chance to go to Scotland, which I'm leaving on Saturday. I'm going with
Andrea
Perrin, Rick McCallum. We're going to be going to Scotland. And I'm doing a gallery reading there at one of the castles. And then I went on the air with Essex Ghost Hunters in the United Kingdom to talk about that. And then I was offered a radio show. So now I do the Paranormal Project radio show. So it's like one thing after another has sort of developed and spilled over. And I've been very, very, very fortunate. And now here I am chatting with you. I mean, you have one of the most successful podcasts around.
Thank you. You'll have a great time with Andrea. Have you met Andrea in person before?
I have.
Okay.
So I met Andrea. I mean, we've texted, we've chatted, but I met Andrea in person last year. I think it was the Ocean State Paracon, if I'm not mistaken. We had a chance to chat in person, but we're going to spend quite a bit of time together this coming week and a half. So it should be great.
You have a good time. She's great. I saw her last year. I was just on a vacation in Florida and I sent her a picture and she's like, "Are you in Florida?" I'm like, I'm at Disney. She's like, "I'm like a half hour drive." So we got together for lunch the next day. And
how nice. And you know what? It's like you've known her all your life.
Oh, yeah, completely. And she's been a guest on the show. She was like the first guest on this show many, many, many years ago. When she was first kind of starting to do the book thing. So it's been really interesting to watch all of her stuff kind of evolve over the years as well. I want to ask you, as we kind of go back in some of the things you were just talking about, prior to the funeral home, the brand new funeral home that you started to have those experiences in, did you have any experiences prior to that at the other two, or even, you know, when you were kind of working your way up in that industry when you were younger?
In terms of hauntings, no. I it's funny because the other two funeral homes were older. One was built in 1950. One had been a funeral home since 1920.
Yeah.
And neither one of them, I just never experienced anything. But I don't know if you've experienced this, but I think you become more aware and more sensitive to things, you know, the further along you go. So certainly even today, I'm much more sensitive and aware than I was 2 years ago or 3 years ago.
Sure.
Even. I think that sometimes I wonder if I would have been getting messages back then, but didn't recognize what they were. Because let's face it, I don't know if you know anything about mediumship really, but it's not like you see on TV.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not walking down the cereal aisle having conversations with dead people while I'm, you know, shopping for Cheerios. It just doesn't work that way.
But it's a great way to keep other customers away from you, whether you're having the conversations or not. They think you're nuts.
Absolutely. Yes.
So, all about doing
sometimes
that.
Sometimes it's a handy tool. But I think sometimes the way that I receive messages, I could have been, but I didn't recognize it.
Sure.
And now I do. And it's so subtle.
Yeah.
But the haunting part of it was not something that I had ever experienced at all. And even when it started to happen at the new place, I questioned it because I'm still a skeptic. Sure. You know, above all, I'm still a skeptic. And that's why, you know, the whole confidence thing with becoming a medium, I mean, I struggle with that too, because I question even what I get sometimes.
Sure, sure.
But you know what they say, how many times is a coincidence no longer a coincidence?
Exactly. You know? And how much is it, you know, just our brain trying to push it off going, this is a logical answer, move on. And sometimes it's something much deeper than that. When you were at the funeral home, the third one that had all the activity at, did you ever kind of dig into that a little bit to try and figure out? I mean, number one, yeah, you are a funeral home, so you're kind of a battery for energy of those mourning and such. But did you ever dig into who might be coming through, or did you have a resident one, or did it kind of just?
I searched through the Historical Society, and at one time I was able to find. I didn't find a photo because the house had burned. Well, let's see. This would have been maybe around the year 2000 and 100 years before. So there was no photo, but I did find some kind of a line drawing, or someone had sketched it. Mm-hmm. And have you ever heard of the S.K. Pierce Victorian Mansion?
I don't believe so.
So that's in Massachusetts. Very haunted Victorian mansion.
Okay.
And this was... It's sort of a sister house to that, just as big. They were all furniture manufacturers in this town back in the day. And so these mansions, they had servants. It was these were their homes of the owners of the factories.
It looks like Norman Bates, the Psycho House.
Yeah. Kind
of, yeah, very much so.
It does. But, you know, I'll tell you, if you ever get a chance to come out this way, I'm not sure where you're located, but the S.K. Pierce. So I lived about four doors down from that.
Okay.
And it was abandoned. Always wondered what was inside. Never knew. Someone went in and bought it, and it has been restored. It has to be to the tune of well over $1 million.
That's amazing.
It's incredibly beautiful. But I've had the most paranormal experiences I've ever had right there in that house in the middle of the day.
Yeah.
My house, or my funeral home, was built on land that was... had a home that was similar to that. It looked very, very similar to that. And it was a furniture family. And at one time I knew the name. I just can't remember the name of the family that lived there.
Sure.
So that's who they were. And I know that the house burned. I'm sure there were people that died there at one time or another. You know, I just don't know.
Yeah.
You know, there wasn't a lot known on them, but, who would have thought? And you know, the other interesting thing too, there was a murder on that property in the early 1970s. There was a nursing student who would cut across from the hospital to downtown. It was sort of a cut through and she was murdered on that property. So, you know, there could be some of that.
There's a lot, a lot of things that could have happened. Let me ask you this. Right. 'Cause I mean, obviously you spent far more time in a funeral home than probably anybody. Unless you're a fellow funeral director, you know, but you're kind of a small group of people that have spent that much time in those sort of locations. When you look at this retrospectively, not necessarily what you're thinking at the moment, but when you look back at a place like a funeral home, I'm always curious about this because they're not places that people spend a whole lot of time in for the most part. But, you know, you're there. There's very, very intense emotions, probably sometimes some of the most intense emotions that one goes through in their life happens in these buildings. And the dead, you know, maybe they were there for a funeral once or twice. But again, usually not much that's happened there. When you look back, what do you think it is about funeral homes, other than just the idea of, you know, its theme is death. Is it the energy of the people that go through there and that energy that's expelled that kind of makes the place more ripe for events to happen? Is it just, you know, is it the bodies coming through? What's your take on all of that?
You know, I think that they're not as active as people think they are. I think people get spooked out. They're spooked out by death. They're spooked out by bodies.
Yeah.
From personal experience, I have been in and out of funeral homes since I was 16 years old and have not seen one that is haunted except for mine. And I know why it's haunted, because it was built on that land. Mm-hmm. But there was no other experience or event or haunted anything that was happening in any of the other funeral homes. In fact, that's where I went to work. So, you know, we went in, the lights were on.
Yeah.
Sometimes we were playing music in the background, like real music, like on the radio.
Yeah.
Not hymns, you know, because no one else is there.
We're you mean
there.
You don't
we're
listen to the
we're doing our job. It didn't feel scary or spooky to us.
Sure.
So, but as someone who goes to awaken, I can relate to this because if I know someone that's passed or a relative of someone that's passed, even though I've done this for 35 years, you know, I walk in and I still feel this. It's different when you're on the other side of the equation.
Sure.
So you're going in as a mourner, you're going there to support someone and the energy is very different, but I don't think it's necessarily charged in the way that people think it is. I think it's their own fear that plays into it.
Really? That's interesting.
That's just my thought.
Sure.
Just my thought.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's all a conjecture. It's very interesting to hear that from someone who spent so much time there, because we don't get a lot of funeral stories on our other show, Real Ghost Stories Online, but we do some. And I do wonder about that. Well, like what is there that's haunting? Because usually it doesn't seem to me like it would be the person who's being mourned, but more so that kind of energy of those that have come and gone from the place. I mean, is there a palpable energy when you were working in that industry of, you know, after somebody goes in, there's like a really big funeral or something, a lot of people coming and going, very loved human being that had passed away, and then everyone's gone out of the building once it's done. Would you say there was still an energy there, or was it something maybe you just weren't quite aware of at that moment in time?
I don't think I'm aware of it or was aware of it the way that I'm aware of it now.
Yeah.
I think that at the time, you know, you were aware of the energy of the support, the love, the room was filled, mm-hmm. and then all of a sudden it's quiet again. So, you know, that mm-hmm. is very noticeable, but in terms of any kind of real energy, I never felt it back
no.
then. It just wasn't a thing. And you know, and again, even if I did, I don't know if I would have recognized it. I was so focused on working and doing my job
sure.
that, you know, until you're there and there's people coming up and down the stairs and they're not really there, then mm-hmm. you have no choice but to accept the fact that there's something going on. But in terms sure. of my work and the funeral work, I, you know, people would pass, you would bring them in to the funeral home, you would bring them out on the day of the funeral. I never felt that they were hanging out with me.
Yeah.
In fact, I thought just the opposite. I'll tell you an interesting story. You know, I used to always feel like, why would they want to hang out with me?
Mm-hmm.
They don't even know me. Sometimes they knew me, but most often they didn't. So I don't see any reason why they'd want to hang out with me. I had a funeral one day of this woman who passed. She was she was the proverbial cat lady.
Okay.
But not in a negative way.
Yep.
She would bring in strays. She was a foster mom to cats and she'd help them get rehomed. But she always had cats. Now, we were at the cemetery. We had a service for her. She's at the grave. Everyone's there. And out of nowhere, this cat walks around the back of the casket, rubs itself up along the side of the casket, and sits. Now, I've never seen a cat in that cemetery before. I'd been there, I don't know how many times, hundreds of times, never seen a cat there. But on that particular day, there was a cat there for her. That, to me, was something that said, that's interesting. You know, I don't know if I thought much of it other than that's really interesting.
Yeah.
But you wonder, because the more I do this work, I realize that nothing's really a coincidence, that there are things and messages and signs that are around us all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And that could have just been one of them.
Well, this is kind of an interesting question, and it's might be more difficult to answer because you weren't as in tune as you are now with your abilities. But when I'm imagining over the course of time, everybody thinks of funerals like, oh, a lot of people are coming to mourn and this or that. What about those funerals that happen and maybe they weren't such a great person? Maybe they did something fairly bad.
I've been there for those.
And they're dead now. And, you know, a handful of people show up or maybe a bunch of people show up. I mean, the energy has to be a little bit different for something like that. What would your experiences have been?
Yeah, it's awkward. It's awkward because, you know, no matter who they were in life, you know, our job, my job was to treat them with respect and dignity and send them off. And, you know, they're going to get judged the way they get judged. And whatever their relationship was with their family, you know, that's between them and their family, right? They're the ones that have to manage that. But I've seen some, crazy stuff. I've seen people, you know, get up to say a eulogy and then lambaste the person, tell them what a terrible person that person was. And you sit there with your mouth open going, oh my God, are you kidding me? This is happening right now. There's been that kind of stuff. It's not common, but it happens from time to time. And, you know, those sort of relationships and things, I mean, all those people were around, they were, they lived, they did things. Some were good, some weren't good. It's just how it is. You know, we all go that route.
And then sometimes it ends up being called out, even if it is at the funeral itself. That had to be, you could probably write a book on just some of the adventures, not even ghostly.
Honest to goodness. the stuff is, you know, it's comical. And when I say comical, I mean, you know, as comical as it can be within the scope of what we're dealing with here, but it is, I mean, I've dealt with some really crazy stuff.
Let's talk about your mediumship and this didn't come on, or you didn't really realize it until later in life. How did this come about? Where did you kind of get this inkling that maybe you got something going on here?
It was really strange. So there were a couple of different events, and at the time I didn't quite put them together. And then I started looking at them collectively and thought, all right, this isn't normal. So first thing that happened was, it was a Friday night and I was home, and this guy walked into my business. Mm-hmm. There was a woman working there, and he asked for me, and she said, I'm sorry, he's not here tonight. He's home. Can I take a message? And he said, oh, sure. Just tell him David stopped by. So David left. Mm-hmm. And she texted me, and I thought, well, who's David?
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know anybody named David. Nobody that would text me anyway. I couldn't think.
Yeah. It wasn't like a brother or a dad or something.
Yeah,
it
was just no.
Yeah.
And I looked on the security camera, and there he was, bald, tall, dressed in black, black jeans, black shirt, like a long sleeve t-shirt, I think like a Harley shirt or something like that. Mm-hmm. And it bugged me a little bit because he knew who I was, but I had no idea who he was. And he asked for me by name. Mm-hmm. His name is David. This man, I sort of waited for him to come back. He's never called. Now, this has been years. Mm-hmm. Never called and never came back. Never heard from him again. Mm-hmm. Don't know who he is. About a week and a half later, I was home, and I got all of the pieces of my new portal. I made one from scratch. I got the guitar amp and the noise gate and the reverb and all this other stuff, and put it all together. And I'm sitting at home, and I know they say you should never do this at home, but you know, I wanted to see if it worked.
Sure.
So I put all the pieces together, turned it on, and immediately it says, I want to talk to Scott. And of course, mm-hmm. I said, I'm Scott. Who's this? This is David. And it didn't click at that moment.
Yeah.
I had recorded it. As a matter of fact, I have these recordings. If you'd like to hear any of them, I can play them for you. But it was amazing. And so I had dinner with my team. We were going on an investigation. I was telling a couple of people, not because I thought it was paranormal, but what had happened with the two people. And then one of the women said, well, geez, that's interesting. They're both named David. And I went, see, that's right. They are. And thought about it for a minute and thought, that's just a strange coincidence.
Yeah.
After that, David showed up everywhere. David, every time I'm on an investigation, he shows up. To this day, he shows up. We turn on the spirit box and it's David. Mm-hmm. But at the time, it was really strong. And I would get women coming on the spirit box saying, Scott, David's back. David's here. So this went on for a couple of months. I was at an investigation at the SK Pierce, the place that I told you about.
Yeah.
And actually, I take that back. We were not an investigation. We were doing, it was a class. It was like a dowsing pendulum class. And yeah. We were sitting there. And my friend Julie and I, who's my co-host on the show, we were in the room. It was 2 p.m, the front parlor. Others had gone into the kitchen to get a little bit of a bite to eat. And we felt this energy, and I'd never felt that before. And it was came along the left side of me, moved around the back. She felt it. We looked up and we could see it coming across the ceiling, this black, I won't call it a mist because it was definitely more solid than a mist, but it amoeba shaped, and it disappeared right between the chandelier and the ceiling. And we pulled out my voice recorder and I said, did we just see you? And you could hear plain as day. Yes. So that had never happened to me before. That night I went home, friends were on an investigation and they were doing a Facebook Live and they had their portal. They were trying it out. They just got it. Mm-hmm. And I was watching and I had other friends that were watching. And plain as day, the voice through the box said, I want to talk to Scott. And they said, he's not with us tonight. Who's this? This is David. And I thought, all right, this is it. I mean, this guy is showing up everywhere, yeah. Everywhere. Now, I wasn't thinking I must be a medium. No, what I thought was, I have an attachment or I'm losing my mind. One
sure,
of the two.
Sure.
It was starting to get a little creepy because I was starting to feel things that I had never felt before. I started to feel like when I was around spirit, I was starting to understand what that feeling was like. Mm-hmm. There were times it felt like it was sitting on my shoulders. The pressure was so strong and I didn't know how to control it. I was getting messages. People were coming to me. I was talking to a woman at work. She mentioned her mother, and then there's her mother. And I'm like, you know, and you see it with your mind's eye. So you sort of, you can trick yourself into thinking you're not really seeing it, but I could describe her exactly what she was wearing. And she had the little Easter corsage and the woman looked at me with her face, her jaw almost hit the floor when I mentioned Easter and everything. So I'm thinking, I don't know what's going on here. I felt like I was really losing my mind and I didn't tell anybody except for my friend, Julie, mm-hmm. because I knew she wouldn't, she's a psychic empath and I knew she wouldn't think I was completely crazy, but I ended up reaching out to this woman that I had met and she's a medium. And I said, listen, I have a problem and I don't know what to do about it, but I'd like to talk it through with you. And so she called me and she sensed that this guy, David, needed to be crossed over. And I thought, okay, well, that's great. So, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, what's this got to do with me?
Yeah, what are you supposed to do?
I've never done that. I mean, I don't know anything about this.
Yeah.
So she says, well, next time he shows himself to you, like you feel him or you can talk to him, just tell him that you know someone that'll help him, but you can't do it. You know, that, you know, someone else will help him. So later that night, I sat after work. I sat there and I said, okay, if you're here, David, I want you to let me know you're here. Give me a sign. I have someone that'll help you, but you've got to let me know. And like on cue, there it was. I could feel him from the top of my head to the soles of my feet. And I said, that's it. I called her. And that night we spent 3 hours on the phone crossing him over. And unbeknownst to me at the time, she was testing me and not testing me because she didn't believe me. She was testing me because she wanted to see if she could back up what I was seeing. In other words, she had a feeling that perhaps there was some mediumship stuff going on, but she was trying to check and see without telling me she was checking and seeing. Mm-hmm. So we sat there. It was about 9:30 at night. And she's asking me, what do you see? What do you feel? I'm asking him, this is her saying, I'm asking him to tell you exactly what he's feeling and show you. So we went back and forth and she, you know, I said, yeah, he said, thank you. And she's like, oh yeah, yeah, yeah. I can totally relate to that. Well, we did this whole thing where we created this staircase for him to walk up and go to heaven. Right. Basically, mm-hmm. you know, it's sort of all imagery.
Yeah.
And she says, tell me what he's doing along the staircase. And I said, okay. He got halfway up. He turned. He kind of blew a kiss. And she said, oh, my God, I saw that. So she's validating what I'm seeing. Mm-hmm. We got to the top, and there was such a bright light, and he waved. And there was a group of people behind him, and I couldn't tell who they were because they were, the light was so bright that they just looked black to me. You know, just, they were just blacked out by the white light. And he was just absorbed in it, and he was gone. And that was it. And the light went away, and the staircase went away. And she said to me, who else is here? And I looked, and there was one other woman. She crossed her over, and I heard her say, that's it, people. There's nobody else getting crossed over tonight. That's not our job. Move along. And Tony, it was like, if you've ever been a nightclub at 2 a.m. mm-hmm. and they turn the lights on and you see all the desperate people.
Yeah. Yeah.
that's what it was like. It was like 2 o'clock at the nightclub.
Yeah.
The lights, it was like the lights went on and I could see them all. And I gasped. I gasped. There were, I think, hundreds and hundreds of people just there. And then they sort of like backed up and the light went out and they were gone. And that was it. David didn't bother me for a little while. And then he came back.
Really?
And we were at an investigation in Vermont at the Wilson Castle in Vermont. And surprisingly, you know, came through, this is David. And I said, is this David that we crossed over? And he said, yes. And all of this is on my channel, by the way, my YouTube channel, the Paranormal Project Radio Show, because we caught a lot of this stuff on video. So I said, you know, David, are you crossed over? And he said, yes. And he was just coming through to say hi. And he does it all the time. He comes through to say hi. He's with me. But then I had to learn how to control this.
Yeah.
I had to learn how to control this because you can't have it happening to you at work. You can't have it. You can't function. And you really start to feel like you're losing your mind. Mm-hmm. Because even sitting and having this conversation with you, there's a part of me that says, this isn't normal. People don't go through this stuff.
Yeah, this is not the normal conversation. That
it is not the normal conversation. Yeah. It is not a conversation that I ever had. They would have locked me up if I, you know, had met with a family in the funeral home and said, you know, oh, my mother loved sewing. Oh, I know, she was telling me in the other room. I mean, you know, you can't have that conversation with people, you know? So, and I think that's why somehow I was protected from that. I don't think it would have been a good situation for me at the time.
That wraps up the first part of our conversation with Scott in part two. You don't want to miss it. Who was David and why did he come to Scott for help? What happened when the spirit David returned after being crossed over? Could people who commit horrendous crimes be possessed yet never recognized as such? And what does it feel like to emotionally cross over a good and a bad person? Until next time, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.
Mr. Monopoly here. Monopoly is back at McDonald's. Register in the McDonald's app so you're ready to
get your bag.
Two-way ways to peel for a chance to
get your bag.
Physical peels with select items and digital peels with others to
get your bag.
Play Monopoly at McDonald's.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
No purchase necessary. See rules at playmcd.com for full details and amoe.playmcd.com to play without purchase. Ends November 23rd, but bonus play ends November 2nd. Monopoly is a registered trademark of Hasbro. Copyright McDonald's.